Ba 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 ba. Hip and the lip. Ba 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 ba. From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the lip.
Yes, good evening, everybody in hipster, hip and lip nation. Good evening on this Wednesday, the 28th day of September, and it's fall season. Last episode was during the summer. It is now fall. The leaves are changing and all that
crap. All right, thank you very much. Earth to hipsters, earth to hip and the lip nation, as the lip began the episode.
Breaking news. Fall began a week ago today.
We are a New York Islander sports podcast, and we cover New York sports. We're just a couple of dudes somewhere in the New York City area. Whatever. Here we are, going to get into it about the New York Mets, because they're still relevant. All right. Maybe they'll make the playoffs. And then Zelman will start the first game. All right. We'll talk about the New York Giants. We'll talk about the New York Jets. And there is some Islanders talk coming, but it won't be first, as most of you exhale in relief.
Yes, because usually we will get, our summer episodes has been a little two-minute gas segment on the Islanders. Like, oh, they signed another Barclays article, or they signed this idiot to a training camp tryout contract. But no, we actually will talk about the Islanders for more than 2 minutes.
But, 3 minutes, I hope, at most.
I was going
to
say.
The lip has about 15 lines of notes, so we're going to have to spend about a second a word here that he has and get through it with no follow-up analysis.
All the storylines, yes.
So I saw another headline about refusing to talk about Barclays. Oh, the move. Oh, all right. Well, enough for now. Let's get into it. New York Mets. Who's pitching for the New York Mets? Well, they still have Syndergaard. They still have Bartolo Colon, but then who?
Who are starting
three of the five games for the New York Mets on a given week?
Step right up and greet the Mets, since you don't know who the hell they are.
It's
who's
pretty
that guy
incredible,
pitching?
Actually.
Who's that guy in the bullpen?
It's pretty incredible that they are in position to play the play-in wild card game. They actually have the first of two spots with St. Louis and San Francisco, you know, fighting for the second spot, and you know, possibly overtaking the Mets, because they're all three teams are, you know, within two games in the standings. And when we talked about this, you know, a couple months ago now, it was more about how inconsistent their offense was, how their pitching would be fine because of the depth. Well, the pitching has slowly deteriorated rapidly, however you want to describe it. You know, obviously Harvey going down, then Jacob DeGrom. Now Steven Matz is the latest casualty, and he will not pitch for the remainder of the season after undergoing a procedure to remove that lingering bone spur in his elbow, which, the way, Syndergaard has in his elbow currently as well.
The last one standing out of the big five. The last one standing as one of
exhale, them. Exhale, exhale. So this does set up.
Knock on wood if you're a Mets fan. Knock on wood that Syndergaard remains standing at least through whatever the end will be.
But you know what? The next time that Syndergaard will take the mound, I believe, if this plays out, is the wild card game. I don't think he's scheduled to pitch through Sunday. I don't believe he is. So that is the plan.
Well, if they need the game on Sunday, that would be his normal day.
Yes, if they need it. So, right. So they have the flexibility, which sets up perfectly, I think, given the current scenario. So it sets up well in that respect. If they need him to secure the playoff spot, then let him pitch. Or they save him for the wild card game. But you know, I see you went at length to add to our agenda here. Yes, we actually, you may never have thought that we had some plan in advance on our shows, but the lip went crazy here typing out. This must have taken you like 2 hours. Typing out happens when there's a three-way tie for the wild card. So if all three teams have exactly the same record for two spots. So See if
you're. I would say it's unlikely.
Has prepared you to explain it coherently.
Well, I don't know about that. It is somewhat confusing, I guess, but I don't think it's going to happen. If you want my opinion, I think you may see a two-way tie. So right now, when you look at the standings, and I guess St. Louis right now is leading. No, I'm sorry. They're losing in their game to Cincinnati. They have a game in hand on the Mets. The Giants are getting underway, I think, in a little bit. I guess they've gotten underway now against Colorado. So right now, the way the standings sit, the Mets are at, let's go back.
The Mets game is over, right?
So the Mets have won. They sit currently at the number one wild card spot at 85-74. You then have the Giants, 83-74, Walton game in hand on the Mets. And then St. Louis at 82-75. Once the evening ends, they will have a game in hand on the Mets. So Mets are sitting in pretty good position right now. They have three games with the wonderful Philadelphia Phillies in Philadelphia. That'll probably be three Mets home games. I'm sure you'll see plenty of blue and orange in the Philadelphia stands. Hopefully the Philadelphia fans just don't care and are not going to be looking to start any fisticuffs with the Met fans, as you and I have personally experienced at Met games in Philadelphia. But so the Mets are set up pretty good. But yeah, so basically three-way tie for the wild card in case that happens. It goes like this. Now, if it's a two-way tie, so if one team out of the three has a wild card and the other two teams are tied, then they'll just play, the 163rd game, or whatever you want to call it. Winner of that game, of course, will go on to the wild card game the next day. So that's simple. Three-way tie. So it goes like this. First, I guess they have to rank the team. So they'll do it based off of head-to-head record. So what I read is that, and I just typed this verbatim in there. So the Mets and the Cardinals are both 4-3 against the Mets, against the Giants. So they would play on Monday. And then the winner would actually make the playoffs. So because the Mets and the Cardinals have better records than the Giants, they both benefit. They play each other Monday, and then the winner is in the playoffs. That's it. But the loser then would get a chance to play the Giants in San Francisco. I guess that would be Tuesday. It says probably, but I guess that would be Tuesday. When the hell else are they going to do it? And then that would be a winner will then advance to the playoff game. And then that would be Wednesday night. That will be the wild card one-game playoff on Wednesday. But I guess there are a couple of complications. You can really dig in deep into this. I guess the complications are that the hosts, if the Mets and Cardinals were to play each other in a tie-breaking game, that would be determined based off of, because they've gone 3-3 against each other, so there's no head-to-head tiebreaker. So then they would look at divisional record, but we don't know what that's going to be yet because they both have divisional games remaining. So we still have to wait to see how that will play out, so we won't know until after the season ends. The top-ranked team actually has a choice of whether it plays on Monday or waits until Tuesday. And then I just put in, no team is likely to choose one chance at the playoffs. Whatever. So basically, the Mets and the Cardinals would benefit the most from the three-way tie. They would play each other, the loser would play the Giants, and then the winner of that game will be in the playoffs. So there you go. Very, very simple. I'm sure everybody got that and is like, oh, wow, I'm going to go to work tomorrow or go to school tomorrow and impress everybody with my knowledge of the tiebreaker situation for the baseball wild card playoffs.
The fact that you brought that to light means that somebody, meaning you, actually thinks that because I look forward to impressing somebody. I would like to know
because it's a possibility. I mean, the Cardinals are only one game back in the loss column. I mean, I still don't think it'll happen. I think but there is a possibility that it will. So, if it does happen, then it gets very kooky.
I'm not disregarding the possibility. I'm acknowledging that you're pointing out that somebody actually consciously looks forward to showing off the fact that they're aware of this level of detail. And the fact that you're acknowledging that means that you yourself may be the one who looks forward to that.
I mean, who wouldn't though? I mean, it would just be crazy. I mean, it's crazy enough just with the regular system.
You know what would happen in the case is while I'm getting water, let me just happen to explain what happens in the event of a three-way tie for the wild card. It starts with the criterion of head-to-head record. Did you know that? Well, did you know what criterion is, Jimothy?
well, that'll be me tomorrow at the water cooler as I, you know, when I get to work in the morning. So I'll be impressing all of my coworkers as they all look at each other with their W gas expressions like, all right, next, moving on, next.
As they do every day.
As they do every day. So, yeah, I guess it would be par for the course. Just I would get even more, pronounced W gas expressions on the faces of my coworkers.
This is the closest that I've been to crying from laughter on this show.
We'll just think all of our listeners right now are just thrilled that they are now know all the intricate details of the tiebreaker system that Major League Baseball has instituted for their two wild card teams. But if three teams tie, then A, B, and C and D.
I'm gonna flip the script very, very suddenly and with no transition. Just because it's related to the Mets, I caught a few innings of Monday's game against the Marlins. And man, it was just so surreal to watch. I missed D. Gordon's home run. He had a leadoff home run in the bottom of the first inning for the Marlins. D. Gordon had zero home runs on the year. And I'm bringing this up because, you know, their star pitcher, Jose Fernandez, just, you know, dies, as most people listening know, died tragically in a boat accident late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. It's a 24-year-old, you know, Cuban defector who's probably a top five, maybe even higher than that, was pitcher in all of Major League Baseball, 24 years old, with just such a crazy future ahead of him, and really just an ambassador of the sport, given his background and how, you know, he was incarcerated in Cuba for trying to escape. I think he had tried to escape three times before he did successfully, and I came across some, you know, short video clips online in the days of mourning, and every clip that you would see of Jose Fernandez was just this guy who could not show any more positive enthusiasm for the sport on the field. Like, this was just a person that, you know, loved the game for what it was and just had all the and played for all the right reasons and was, you know, because it was a game. And, you know, that type of energy just reverberates on people, and that's why this, you know, it's just beyond the fact that, you know, he's somebody who passed, but the impact that he had on everybody he touched. And watching that game, like, the Mets announcers, they couldn't even, like, call the game. They couldn't even think straight. It was pretty incredible just how they were on the air live in mourning, like, they didn't even want to talk baseball. But it's something that, if you're a fan of the sport, I think it's worth seeing if you could catch some of that. They had a pregame ceremony where they all put their hats on the maybe it was after the game. I don't remember now, actually. They put all their hats on the mound. You know, they retired his number. I think that was before the game. They all wore his jersey. Just such a sad, obviously a really sad story, and one that's not going to go anytime soon. But D. Gordon, you know, he's the leadoff hitter on the Marlins, and you know, the skinniest guy you'll see in the sport. And he hits a home run this first of the year into the upper deck where there's never anybody sitting except for that game because people came out to pay tribute to Jose Fernandez. And just jogging around the bases, and he touches home plate, jogging to the dugout, the guy just starts breaking up in, you know, into tears. And really, really beyond words, I can't describe it any more than that. But you just have to feel it from watching it. And you know, you didn't have to touch it directly, this guy, this pitcher, just, you know, just one of those things that impacts so many people. So going from crying and laughter to pretty much crying and sorrow, but that's what we do. And you know what? The beat goes on. Tomorrow's another day, and here we are with another show. And sports have, you know, ups and downs. Some are really, really high. Some are really, really low. Puts my 0-3 fantasy football start into perspective a little bit. and perhaps let's just, you know, give you a chance to say a few things, and then we'll move on to the Giants.
I mean, I don't think I have to. I mean, I think you've pretty much touched on it. You know, I mean, really, what else is there to say? It's horrible. It's a tragic. I mean, anybody that loses their life at that age, of course, it's always tragic. But, you know, this was, like you said, somebody that was the top five pitcher in baseball, you know, going to on the cusp of a brilliant career, what it looked like was going to be a brilliant career. And, yeah, his, you know, personal story and defecting from Cuba and, you know, multiple times, you know, multiple attempts and, you know, eventually was able to, you know, defect and come here and, you know, seek the opportunity that this country affords that Cuba, of course, does not. And, you know, to play baseball and, yeah, it's, I mean, it's just, it's tragic and it's, you know, something, like you said, it just puts things in perspective. And I have two TVs in my living room. So, you know, one TV, of course, like the other 84 million people in this country had it tuned to the debate between the two, candidates for president. And then we had, the Mets Marlins game on the other TV. And so of course we didn't have the volume on that, but, I mean, you know, so, I mean, I couldn't get the full effect that you were able to watching it, but saw highlights of D. Gordon and, you know, batting right-handed the first pitch, and then he had to hit a home run all year, and then he, you know, puts one into the second deck, you know, yeah. And, you know, for his first home run of the season. And, yeah, just seeing, like, all the emotion and on display from both teams, from both the Mets and the Marlins, and then just seeing the end of the game tonight, after the Mets won, and then seeing Terry Collins embrace with Don Mattingly and the players, and
so. I didn't get to see that. That must have been
So after the Mets game was over this evening, you saw Collins and Mattingly come together and the players. So just awful, terrible, and shocking. I mean, you just don't expect to see that. And
I hope MLB does something like dedicating this playoffs or this postseason, you know, something like that in memory of Jose Fernandez. I think they, as sad of a story it is, I think it's one to celebrate. It's a way to celebrate his life and everything he brought and all the positive impact he had on so many people. And even though the Marlins are making the playoffs this year, I don't know if they're mathematically eliminated, but they're pretty much out of it. They were ahead of the Mets for a time there not too long ago. Anyway, I don't know if they. I think they will, and they obviously should. It's a, you know, because you're gonna have a lot of younger viewers watching the postseason, and you know, Miami's a fairly small market. You know, the teams that they draw, but it's a story that I think is important to share with baseball fans throughout the country and younger fans. It sets a great example for how the game should be played on and off the field. Okay, so
all right,
your New York Giants, your New York football Giants, they had to lose a game, huh, at some point. Oh well,
I guess so. So I guess
the
they're not going to go.
What was the final? 29-27.
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
So a home loss, the divisional foe, last year's divisional champion, Washington Redskins.
Right.
I defer to you for the most part on this one. I listened to most of the game in the car, and you know, it just sounds like one of those games that the Giants almost like last year, actually, where they had these close losses where they were in control for a lot of the game, and it just, you know, on a higher level, and they just let slip away. Feel like that again? I mean, I know that they were 2-0 at this point, so it probably didn't, you know, because they've built up some momentum, but as a standalone, was this one that just got away from them?
Yeah, I mean, it came undone. I mean, they imploded. I mean, that's what they did. I mean, this was a game that they absolutely should have won. They are, I think, the better team. You know, I think they're better than the Redskins. And, you know, they got out to a 21-9 lead. They look good offensively. You know, defense, you know, they, you know, as they did the first couple of games, they gave up some yardage, but they weren't letting the other team get the ball, you know, put the ball in the end zone. And they had a 21-9 lead, and then everything just came undone. I mean, you know, where do you start? I mean, you can start with, You can look at the penalties. You can start. You can talk about the turnovers. You could talk about their terrible play on special teams, giving up big plays, which was reminiscent of last year. You know, they gave up, you know, a zillion, you know, plays like over 20 yards last year. A couple of those in this game. You know, injuries factored into this game. Odell Beckham had another meltdown on the sideline. Where do you begin with this, honestly? But at 21-9, you know, they look like they're in control of the game. And then DeSean Jackson, who has been a giant killer, you know, his entire career going back to his days with Philadelphia and through Washington, again, torches the Giants for a 40-plus yard touchdown pass. You know, perfectly thrown ball by Cousins and, you know, good coverage on the play, I think. I think it may have been Jenkins that was running with him, but you know, Jackson gets good position and a perfect throw from Cousins, and now all of a sudden it's 21-16. I thought the turning point of this game was when the Giants were driving the ball. They're down. I think at this point they were down 23-22, if I remember correctly. Washington actually had just scored on another big play by Jamison Crowder, who had took a 3rd-and-15 screen pass and took it, you know, 50 plus yards to the end zone. You know, just a terrible defensive showing on that play, terrible tackling, which, you know, their defense for the most part had tackled well going into this game, you know, the first two games, and their tackling in this game was abhorrent, other than a couple players, which we'll get into. But really the killer play on this drive was a penalty by Winston Richburg, the Giants center, for unsportsmanlike conduct. It was a penalty that got him tossed from the game. He had already committed an unsportsmanlike penalty earlier in the game. He commits one there, gets tossed. They end up committing 11 penalties for 128 yards in the game, the Giants. I think a couple plays later, then Eli Manning threw an interception at the, you know, right at the goal line. He was looking for Will Tye. You know, after he hit, and this is on a drive where they had hit Odell Beckham for a couple of big plays. You know, obviously we knew about, you know, all the nonsense with Beckham and Josh Norman coming into this game, and all the storylines and the referees going up to both of them at the beginning of the game and, you know, saying, hey, any funny business, you know, we're going to call a tight shift here, and any funny business, you know, we're liable to throw you out of the game, so you better not pull anything, and yada, yada. Beckham had made a couple of, you know, terrific plays on that drive, a great one-handed catch, a spin, you know, a catch and a run where he made a nice little spin move on Norman, was able to get away. And they're, you know, they're driving the ball, and then, you know, the penalty and then the interception. And then all of a sudden, all the momentum was lost. Now, it looked like they were going to get the momentum back on a block punt, which took place a little bit later in the game. And on that play, the play was wiped out because of offsetting penalties. I saw the Washington penalty where the Washington player came to bat the ball out of bounds. But also a giant rookie player, I think a corner by the name of Adams, decided to commit one of the stupidest personal fouls you'll ever see. After the punt is already blocked, he decides to just give a whack to the face of the Washington Redskin player, knock them down, personal foul, offsetting penalties, repunt, and then, you know, the Giants would have had the ball, you know, inside the 20-yard line of Washington. Instead, Washington gets the booted away again. The Giants, you know, were able to, to take the lead again with the field goal, and I think at this point they were leading 27-26, and then Washington was able to go on their final drive at the end of the game. A couple of runs by Matt Jones, the giant run defense, which had been good all the game, softened up a little bit, got themselves in the field goal range, kicked the game-winning field goal, even though the Giants would get the ball back. And usually in those spots, Eli Manning, I think, had it. I think he's had like 28 or something fourth quarter comebacks or something like that. He's in the top 10 all time in that category. He's almost automatic in those spots. So you're thinking, all right, you know, he should, they only need a field goal to win the game. He'll probably drive him in the field goal range. The Giants should have, hopefully pull this one out. Instead, a couple plays into the drive, Eli Manning throws an interception looking for Shane Vereen, throws a bad interception. That was all on Eli, and game over. Giants go home 2-1.
Speaking of which, Shane Vereen, did he get injured on that play or something? I mean,
I don't think it was on that play. I think it was something. He may have even had it coming into the game, but he's out for the year. I guess triceps injury, I think. out for the year is Shane Vereen. So now the Giants have to scramble a little bit with their running back situation as Rashad Jennings, who did not play in this game. You know, we don't know what his deal is going to be this week. He's dealing with like a broken finger or something. So we don't know what his deal is going to be.
I think it's a bad thumb.
A thumb, okay. So we don't know. I think he had a cast on it, though, I think. They were discussing whether or not he can play with it, but didn't play this week. So the question is if he'll be back next week. If not, it'll be Orleans Darkwa and Bobby Rainey potentially carrying the load, and maybe Paul Perkins, the rookie. So Giants now are scrambling at the running back position. So it was just one of those games where you just shake your head. Just so many ways the Giants shot themselves in the foot in this game, and then you can get into Odell Beckham losing his control on the sideline. This was right after that interception, in the end zone. Obviously we know Beckham is very emotional, very competitive, and he just wanted to perform against this player, against Norman. You knew that he wanted to, put up a great effort, and he did. He put up, 7 for 120 yards or something like that. But he made a couple great catches on that drive, and then you have him rolling. You have Shepard, who catches everything that's thrown to him. You have Cruz, and Eli decides to throw the ball to Will Ty, and it was definitely an interception that the blame could be shared between Ty and Eli, as that was definitely not a big window that Eli had to put the ball on to Ty, but Ty could have fought, maybe fought for positioning there, or fought for the ball as it was coming in. But and then of course we get Ben McAdoo's comments that Beckham has to control himself. This came, I think, yesterday or something. He said this.
Well, you have to control him, Ben.
Well, yeah, and you see on the side. That is his job. You're absolutely right. I mean, and that's, you saw, yeah, and last year, and here's the difference, though. Last year, nobody went over to Beckham once during the Carolina game against Norman. Nobody went to him once to say, hey, knock it off, stop it. And now, after he threw his little tirade on the sideline in this game, you saw a couple.
Well, were the Giants really a playoff? Were the Giants kind of not a playoff contending team at that stage? Did they not really care? I don't remember.
Year?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think they were officially eliminated. It was, it was a December game, but they were playing a team that was undefeated, and they were down early. They had a chance to come back and win the game, and it just got so out of control. I mean, somebody had to say something to Beckham that day. Nobody did.
Do all these the miscues from the Giants in this game give you a concern about this coaching staff in general going forward?
Well, he's learned, how the other side lives now, Ben McAdoo. He got a couple victories in his first two games. Everything is going well. Everybody's feeling good. Oh, I got this down. And now all of a sudden you lose a game like this where just, so many things go wrong. A game that you absolutely should have won and you were definitely the better team. Now all of a sudden, he has to, learn how the other side lives and deal with, these type of losses where, is it a debilitating loss? Is it a crippling loss? No, it's the first loss of the year. You're three games into the season, losses weigh a lot in the NFL. We know weigh a lot heavier than any other sport because there's only 16 games. And, he's got to figure out a way to rein this in, especially the penalties. And, one thing I'll say is you always hear, the cliches and what cliches do we make fun of in the NFL? Keys to the game from Phil Simms and Jim Nance, or coach, what do you have to do? We have to run the ball. We have to stop the run. We have to not turn the ball over and not commit penalties. The one I will say that I absolutely think is key is not committing penalties. I mean, turnovers, I think, can be overcome. Rushing the ball, it's just become so secondary in the NFL now. I mean, it's a pass-first league. And even stopping the run, yes, it's important, but, they talk about it like it's vital, otherwise you can't win the game. Well, Washington did not stop the Giants running attack, and the Giants, I think, ran for over 100 yards. I think they averaged like about 5 yards a carry. So Washington didn't exactly stop them, and they still ended up pulling out the game. It's penalties. It's the penalties that can kill you. And when you commit 11 penalties for 128 yards, especially the penalties that the Giants committed, the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty and then the personal foul on the block punt. I mean, it is. It's absolutely unacceptable.
Unsportsmanlike conduct getting tossed. I mean, that's just.
Yeah.
That's inexcusable.
Yeah, and Fox, of course, did a terrible job pointing out what the penalty was, because they made it seem like that he, because he hit Norman on the play. It was a play that was going, I think, may have been Beckham, or I forget who was carrying the ball for the Giants, but so when Richburg comes over and knocks down Josh Norman, but it was a block because he was pursuing the ball. But that wasn't the penalty. It was because he decided to say something to him after the play, after he knocked him down, that he got the penalty. And it was clear that he said something. What he said, who knows? But the referee obviously thought it was worth the penalty. So, I mean, it, like you said, it's inexcusable. It's unacceptable. And he has to rein that in, because if they continue to go down this path with these penalties, they're not going to win. I don't care about turnovers, running the ball, stopping.
You get second, third, fourth chances when you do that.
Exactly. And you cost yourself big plays like they did in this game. So, yeah, there you go. A frustrating, irritating, and...
Okay, so were there anything that came out of this game that you liked?
I thought the offensive line actually played really well. They were missing their right tackle. Bobby Hart, the second-year guy, slipped in at right tackle. I thought did a really good job. Richburg, I mean, got thrown out of the game, so they had to bring in their backup center. Richburg is arguably their best offensive lineman, and they continue to do a pretty good job. So you like that's a positive. We'll get into, I guess, a little preview for next week, as they are going to be playing a much better defensive line. In fact, maybe the best defensive line in all of football right
maybe
now.
Maybe the best defense.
Maybe the best defense in all of football in the Minnesota Vikings. So, I mean, hopefully they can, maybe carry, any good feelings that they have after, for the most part, playing pretty well over the
pretty
first
incredible quarter. Last week how Minnesota just dominated at Carolina.
Oh, my. Their defense right now, they are playing.
Cam Newton
think they may
couldn't
be the best
do anything
right
at home. I mean, that's – when was the last time you could have said that?
10-0 lead for Carolina, and then 22 unanswered points for Minnesota, and their defense just absolutely stifles. They harass Cam Newton all game, 8 sacks.
It's not like Sam Bradford threw for 300 yards. I don't even know if he threw for 200.
I mean, offensively, I don't think they did anything. I mean, offensively, they didn't have to do anything. No.
Well, they didn't. They probably didn't turn the ball over.
They score. Well, probably not.
Bradford threw for 171.
Yeah, they score a special teams touchdown, and their defense.
And they ran for 60 yards on the ground. 60 yards rushing, 170 yards passing.
Amazing. You lose your starting quarterback and your superstar running back, and the team looks like they're not going to miss a beat because their defense is playing that well. But what does that remind us of? How about the Denver Broncos from last year, where they have a quarterback that's a corpse of Peyton Manning playing, along with the running game that was almost non-existent the whole year, an offense that was, well below average. But
who's on the defensive line for Minnesota?
Actually, a former Giant, Linval Joseph, plays on the defensive line for Minnesota, who still, plays at a high level, and he's, good 6 or 7 years into the league now. They have another guy, Robeson, that was, I think, a pretty high draft pick. I'd have to go back and take a look. I mean, it's not Carl Eller and Alan Page, from the 1970s of the Purple People Eater days.
Well,
we're gonna
get to see him. Every snap Monday night, and hopefully Eli gets some time to throw it to his, to his trio of receivers. Probably one of the best trios in the NFL. Probably got to be a top five wide receiver trio right now. At worst, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the three of them, I mean, that's another positive to take out of the game is just the Giants' offense looks like, they will continue to get better as long as the offensive line plays well. I mean, they are... they could end up. I mean, I know the running game, may suffer a little bit here. We'll see. And Vereen, we know what he can bring. And
they're going to have to set up more short screens for Shepherd and Cruz. I think we're going to start seeing that more. I don't know if they have a capable guy that can take those short pass off dumps that you mentioned Bobby Rainey, but he's a guy that's he's always had potential, but I don't know. He hits in sporadic splashes. I think you may see them go more of the short Minnesota. I don't know how much, it's going to be an interesting battle at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And offensive scheming. It might be more, chain moving type plays as opposed to really down the field type plays, but we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Shepherd. What I say, in the training camp preview, season preview for the Giants, was that they were raving about Shepherd, and the team was just, thought that he could, be that good, and he has been that good. I mean, he catches everything that you throw at him. I mean, Cruz, looks like, he can, make. you know, a pretty significant impact this year. And, you know, he's already made some big catches for the Giants this year. We know about Beckham's talents and how incredible he is. And, yeah, I mean, you know, their offense, you know, looks like they continue to improve. Their offensive line holds up. They look like they could be really, really good. But we'll see about next Monday, because that is a hellish opponent for them to walk into on Monday.
I wonder
night.
If it's worth maybe holding out Jennings one more game if he's like iffy to play, just because I don't care who you throw there in the backfield, whether it's Darqua or Rainey or Paul Perkins or Jennings. I don't think there's going to be much room to run. Was it the first game? I think it was week two where Green Bay played at Minnesota.
Yeah.
And Eddie Lacy, you know, just couldn't get anywhere. There was just no daylight at all.
Well, did he have a chicken wing in his mouth, and that's why he had trouble.
All right.
So
New York Jets.
Burn the tape.
Well, this was one where exactly I think all you can do is erase this game from memory and move on. I mean, any beyond novice fan of the Jets or general NFL fan knows playing at Arrowhead Stadium is not the most pleasant places to go to.
No, it's one of the roughest places in the NFL to play.
It's one of the worst, and it could not have manifested itself more than this past Sunday for the New York Jets. 8 turnovers, 6 interceptions. What more can you really say? Do you need to say than that? I mean,
it's almost like in the way that the interceptions came at the end of the game, it almost sounds like two guys playing Madden where one is down by 3 touchdowns and is just like throwing like long passes on every play and just getting picked off every play. I mean, it was just it was like a gag reel, almost like a comedic gag reel.
What really jumped off the page. You know, we watched the Jets at the Bills on that Thursday night 2 weeks ago. It must have been one of the best games I've ever seen Ryan Fitzpatrick play. He was slinging the ball down the field, throw after throw, and these weren't those, 5-yard slants and, dump offs to the running back who take it down the field for 15 yards. He was slinging the ball to his receivers against the Bills at ease,
including my receiver Eric Decker.
Decker, Marshall, Inunwa. It seemed like he couldn't make a mistake.
Yeah,
it was like a different person, a different body behind the center. It was incredible. Like it was a completely different player. Now look. Some of those, they dialed up these throws in the red zone. I think they should have ran the ball more there. Hindsight, it's easy to say, but Forte was doing his, grinding out thing like he's been up till this point. And I feel like they got away from that a little bit because the score started to get a little lopsided and they wanted to force it. And, Fitzpatrick has a tendency. Look, he relies, generally speaking, on having that really good timing with his receivers. The Bills game an exception, but he's not a guy to just sling it down the field. That's just not his MO. He throws balls before guys even sometimes break into their, out into their route or they make their move because the timing is so good. And is it just the Arrowhead fever getting the worst of the Jets? I don't know. Obviously,
I thought they looked like they didn't even get off the plane. I mean, they just looked awful from the beginning. They almost looked like they were just like going through the motions, just like uninspired football. It wasn't even just like, you know, just things got out of control and they unraveled. I mean, that was like what happened with the Giants. I mean,
no, they weren't like committing an absurd amount of penalties or anything.
They just looked like they were listless. I don't know. I mean, Travis Kelce is making these easy catches.
Yeah, he made a few.
Turning them into big gains. I don't know. I really was just shocked at how bad the Jets were. You know, again, putting the interceptions and the turnovers aside.
The defense wasn't. They could only do so. You could only do so much when
they play better.
You know,
as
have eight turnovers,
along, but...
and the time of possession is, you know, not in your favor as a defense. I think they did fine given the circumstances. Look for the Jets. Okay, fine. You erase your memory. You move on to Sunday, but. I think the problem is you look ahead at what they have coming up here, and I think the Jets are going to be will consider themselves grateful if they win at least one of their next three games.
And that's why the Cincinnati loss like stings even more, because you know if they're 2-0 going into this game, you have this type. You say, all right, you know it's a tough place to play. You just throw it away. You know you're 2-1. Let's come back now home, beat Seattle. I mean, this Seattle game is, I don't want to say, you know, it's like huge or, you know, try and build it up into it's week 4, but you really feel like the Jets need to win this game against Seattle because, again, you look at the next two games after that at Arizona, at Pittsburgh, that is just going to be very, very difficult. I mean, Seattle is a good team, we know, but they're coming in a little bit banged up.
Two lower leg injuries.
Yeah.
The Jets are headed down a very fast downward spiral if they don't emerge victorious.
Actually, I want to throw an interesting stat out. I was actually wondering about this. So New York Jets quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, you're aware of Pro Football Focus. You know, they do the grading for players and teams and so forth. So they and I don't know exactly, you know, their system or their exactly how they come out with these, you know, with these numbers, how they quantify the
it
players.
I will acknowledge it is a respected algorithm.
All right. So well, that makes this even better than that. Ryan Fitzpatrick, out of the 2,717 games of NFL regular and postseason play that Pro Football Focus has graded, Fitzpatrick just posted the worst single game performance ever.
Jeez. That's hard to believe. I mean, I don't know.
Who actually had the worst? You won't believe this, actually. I'm looking at the list right now. You know who had the worst performance before Fitzpatrick? Let's just say he's a Hall of Fame or will be a Hall of Fame quarterback. No doubt, first ballot, not even a question.
Peyton Manning.
Correct. Last year, week 10 against Kansas City, he got a grade of 23.3. I mean, I can't, you know, I guess I don't know what like the highest are, so I can't like put that, you know, in context, but appropriate context. But Ryan Fitzpatrick got a 21.4 in this game. But I mean, the number, whatever. But the fact that the worst out of 2,100 plus games.
Well, you have to think a game that like Charlie Whitehurst, a game like Charlie Whitehurst started would have been worse than what.
Well, some other names on that list. You'll Brandon Whedon, John Skelton, Brian Hoyer, Geno Smith against the
John Navarre.
John Navarre.
Chad Henne.
Gennard Robinson. Brad, what's his name? Spates? I don't even know his first name. What's his first name?
Brian?
Brian's, I don't know. Something Spate, yeah. But those are some of the other names on that list.
Yeah. Skelton.
John Skelton, the amazing, the immortal.
Oh, they had another starter that year, too. It'll come to me. I'm not gonna.
Oh, Arizona. Well, didn't they have like seven starters that year?
Yeah, Arizona. They went through a bunch of guys.
John Skill. Step right up.
They had one other guy that was really bad on that team that started a few games. Okay. Well, look. I mean, the Jets. It's you know, Todd Bowles has his work cut out for him. I mean, this is going to be a – look, Pittsburgh lost at home on the road, I'm sorry, against Philadelphia last week. Arizona lost on the road against Buffalo. Both teams look sluggish, but
– still, yeah.
Rest assured, they are going to be look, Pittsburgh has Le'Veon Bell back starting this coming weekend. I mean, good luck stopping the Pittsburgh offense. I mean, the Jets are not built to – sling it out with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I don't know if they're going to have a choice. So that's going to be a tough one. But one game at a time, and we'll talk about that one after the Jets are.
Yeah, this is a big one for the Jets. They really need this one against Seattle. It's not going to be an easy game. I mean, Seattle's a good team, but you know, I mean, the Jets. I still think the Jets are a good team. Again, I mean, they just you have that type of game. You just scratch your head, but
you know, though, I mean, there's still a team that's 3-0 already in their division. And they don't even have their best player playing, or two best players playing.
Yeah, well, division, I think you
how
can.
How about that?
I mean,
how
you
about
can.
That? let's just acknowledge
the brilliance of
the incredibleness
of the cheater
of what has transpired for the New England Patriots.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Belichick has figured out a way to one up everybody like he always does. So.
I mean, but. How much look, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo? I can understand because they planned for him to start all offseason because they knew the suspension was going to happen.
Yeah, he's been in the system. He's been the understudy now.
And he's been in the system, but Jacoby Brissett, dominating the Texans. Oh. What?
Well,
the Texans were a walkover defense. And no, I mean, LeGarrette Brown. I mean, the first half they were kind of held in check. Brissett made a few plays. I mean, 3-0 without Brady, without Gronkowski. Gronkowski played in game 3, but he didn't even have a single catch.
I mean,
he was on the field for 14 plays.
Yeah, he was a decoy. He wasn't going to be a factor in the game. Yeah, I mean, I was happy to see LeGarrette Blount's final stat line. I was nervous in the beginning.
La, 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 la.
I traded on, I traded Jay Cutler,
What is going on?
Jay Cutler for LeGarrette Blount, yes.
What is going on for New England? I mean, it's just incredible.
Hey, that team wins. That's it. I mean, that coach wins. That team wins. You know, Tom Brady's a Hall of Fame quarterback, but Belichick just Matt Castle. They went 11-5 with Matt Castle. I mean, the team just wins. The Belichick just knows.
He's just one step. Somehow, he's one step ahead of everyone else.
I mean, whether because he's cheating, whether because he's just like so brilliant and really is a legitimate football genius, he always is just one step ahead of the opponent. Now, look, you know, Tom Coughlin and the Giants, got over him twice in the Super Bowl in the biggest game of the year. So, he'll always have those blemishes on his resume, a Belichick. But, hey, he's definitely regarded
as – you could be one step ahead of everyone. But, you know, when you're the coach, you're not actually on the field. You can only do so much. So
True. But he's definitely going
to take away from what the Giants did. But it's pretty incredible. We'll see how it plays out. Okay.
Yeah, the Jets can kiss the division goodbye. Now just try and go 10-6, make the playoffs as a wild card team, I guess. Because division, you can kiss it goodbye. It's week 3. It's not even a possibility. Brady comes back.
Yeah.
They'll go 13-3 probably. It was something like that.
Okay. So without further ado, it is time for your New York Islanders.
Oh, it is an Islanders podcast. Yes. Well, should we do the Islanders or should we talk about the World Cup of Hockey? Which I'm sure you have watched every second of.
Zero, and I'm sure the LCC would give us negative grades if we spend more than 1 minute on the topic.
All right. Well, it kind of relates at least to doing a preview of really of any NHL team that has a player playing in this tournament. As we've seen a few injuries as well, Marian Gaborik, the Los Angeles King forward, got injured during the tournament, is out. The Pittsburgh goalie, Murray, also injured during the tournament, out. I think maybe one or two other players as well, but John Tavares still up in Toronto for the Islanders, as is Yaroslav Halak, still actually has played he's led Team Europe to the finals against Canada. Yaroslav Halak, our Islanders, Yaroslav Halak, who we were waiting for Gart Snow to dump and, you know, either during the off season or right before the start of the season, you know, maybe build up his trade value, which maybe, you know, he was hoping that he would play really well and get teams to say, oh, Halak can still play. Maybe we'll take a flyer on him. So we'll see how that shakes out. But Halak has played very well, leading Team Europe to the final. Team Europe, that is, of course, again, everybody that's not Russia and Finland and Sweden and the Czech Republic, all the other best players. So Franz Nielsen, the former Islander now, playing for Team Europe. And Thomas Greiss, also should mention, he's still Islander, backup goalie, also playing for Team Europe. So hopefully they come back in one piece. WGS as to who wins, Canada or Europe, whatever. I don't really care. USA, the U.S. team was embarrassing. They were awful. I mean, they were
wins the by championship.
So it's a three-game series. So I think game two is tomorrow, I think. They played game one yesterday. Canada won. So if Canada wins the next game, they win. And yeah, that's it. Whatever. I'm not really interested in it. The U.S.-Canada rating was terrible. U.S.-Canada played last week. I forget if it was Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was. But the rating, I think, was pretty awful. So I guess
advertised anywhere.
It's just, you know, nobody. And that's the thing. I mean, ESPN did not really do a great job of promoting it. But even aside, ESPN. It was just, you know, the Olympics is different because it's something that everybody is aware of and knows about and, you know, they can get into because it creates a groundswell and people, USA hockey, they're winning. They're in the gold medal game against Canada. That's awesome. I got to watch that. World Cup of Hockey is a manufacturer, just, you know, like fake tournament that was, you know, thought up in a boardroom, you know, of the NHL Board of Governors. I mean, that's what this is. I mean, is it the best players playing competitive hockey? Yes. Is that cool? Yes. Do you get to see this, you know, often? No. Is it? And it could be entertaining and really great hockey. But I mean, it's just like, what's my interest? I don't care. Even if the U.S. wins, what do I care? Okay, wonderful. We won. It's not the Olympics. So who cares? So, all right. Like you said, the LCC would be mad if we spend too much time. But hopefully the Islander players come back in one piece. And I'm sure you'll be watching along with our listeners and myself, of course. We'll be watching that final game between Canada and Team Europe. All right, moving on.
All right.
Islanders. All right. So Islanders, an NHL season starting in a couple weeks. How excited are you, Mr. Hip?
hasn't hit me yet.
Well, I guess the Mets are still in it, and the Giants and Jets are in
full
swing.
It's hard to get excited about hockey when you're still in, you know, playoff baseball mode and, like, still in the first quarter of the NFL season. There's a lot to absorb right now.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, look, I mean, I'm sure, you know, most people are not exactly going out, you know, going online and, you know, looking at season previews yet. I mean, the season is a few weeks away, the beginning of season, of course, pushed back by the tournament. But, I'm not really that into it either. I'll be honest with you. I'm not really up in the Islanders. I'll be honest. I'm not, you know, diehard Islander fan I am. And, you know, fan of the NHL and the sport, like I said, I really have not been into this tournament at all, despite the best players participating in competitive hockey. It's not hockey yet. It's September. You know, you'll read a couple of training camp stories. You know, this one is playing well. This job battle between this fifth and sixth defenseman and the depth defenseman and the fourth line center and the backup goalie and all the storylines that every team will have. Not just the Islanders. Every team, you know, has these stories. So, you know, we'll see the rosters come together as we get closer to the season. We'll get a better idea, and we'll go from there. The, you know, Gart Snow, again, you've heard me, you know, did not improve this team. He's hoping that players will step. Not, you know, and I think Gart did not do a good job in the offseason because of the fact that he did not improve this team. He needed to make a daring move, a trade. I've said this. He hasn't done it. I would be shocked if he does. I know he's pulled off, eve of the season moves before bringing in Boychuk and Letty a couple of years ago. I just don't see that happening again. I don't know who would be available at this point. You know, teams are up against the cap. I understand. So maybe we'll see something from a couple of those teams, but I don't think anything's going to happen. If it does, I'll come on, I'll give them credit, and then we'll rejoice and celebrate because they brought in, you know, Matt Duchene or Max Pacioretty or something. But I would say the odds of that happening are pretty slim.
I guess what would be a little interesting to watch are the new guys, the blue chip acquisitions for this team, donning the Islander uniforms, Mr. Ladd and Parenteau.
Don't forget Jason Chimera.
Of course.
The 37-year-old fourth line winger that's coming off of a career season. at the age of 37.
And, you know, to fill the voids created by Matty Martz and Franz, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, we're going to see how they mesh. Yeah.
Brian Strait.
Oh, Brian Strait.
Where is he?
I don't even know.
Is he gone? He's somewhere else. He's latched on.
Signed somewhere. Maybe Winnipeg. I can't even remember where the hell he signed. He's somewhere. I know he was somewhere. I think it was a one-way deal he signed to.
You nailed it, of course. Winnipeg.
Oh, it's Winnipeg. Okay. I vaguely remember that.
He's going to make $600,000.
Is it a one-way deal? I guess it is, right?
Probably.
Okay. Yeah. I'll miss Brian. Right. We hardly knew you. But yeah, you know, some of the young, we'll see, you know, does Matthew Barzal, one of their hot shot young stud prospects, 19 years old, does he make the team? If he does make the team opening night, or if he's, you know, on the roster opening night, will he get more than a 9-game tryout? Or are they looking at it as like, okay, wow us for 9 games. And if you don't, we're sending it back to juniors, you know, some of their other prospects, Joshua Hosang, he'll go to the minors if he doesn't make the team. Michael Dalcol, another, you know, a fifth overall pick a couple of years ago. You would think that the fifth overall pick from a couple of years ago should crack the lineup this year. If he doesn't, I think there's reason to be concerned. Now you can say, well, seasoning, minors, it's not bad, blah, blah, blah. But I'd actually be concerned about him as to his legitimacy as a prospect, because you've been hearing some mixed reviews about him. Barzal, you hear that he's going to be amazing, incredible, his playmaking, his skating, his you know, his vision, his hockey sense, you hear everything, all this about Barzal. Dalcol, you don't hear that. So we'll see how that shakes itself out. Yeah, and the lines, the chemistry, Ryan Strome, he signs a 2-year, $5 million deal, so he signs like right before their deadline, you know, the Islanders' arbitrary deadline. If you don't sign, you're out for the year. So we sign the deal, he'll be there. Obviously, they need him to significantly raise his game from last year, as last year he was terrible. Terrible, no other way to describe him. Terrible. All right. Brock Nelson needs to improve his game. I know he had a good regular season, but he leaves you wanting. You need to see better from him. Parenteau, will he play with Tavares? Probably. Will he be their puck carrier on the power play? How will their defense shake out? You know, Pulak, you know, their depth defense.
We're getting the whole preview now.
I mean, but you know, these are the questions, and, you know, they'll be answered, I guess. And, yeah, well, am I getting you excited? Is that exciting him? Because I'm I mean, these are the training camp stories. They're all will.
Yeah, but
how,
I feel like most of those questions won't get answered until we actually play some real games.
Well, agreed. So, but I'm getting you excited now. That right? So you're sure. Now your focus is now off.
Maybe
the
my fantasy team is 0-6. no choice.
So wait, have you made the playoffs every year? So we've been doing this now, everybody. So we were in a fantasy football league together since 2009, right? It was our first year. Now, you have made the playoffs every year. Is that correct?
I'm not certain of that. I think maybe 1 year I did not.
Oh, well, that's a shame. But you've won 3 championships.
Now, I will add just to toot my horn a little bit that last year or 2 years ago, we only had 4 teams make the playoffs. Now it's 6.
Even more impressive.
But this year, it's just been a complete awful start. And now that we do 6 teams, I don't know if it's better or worse being 0-3. It's probably better because 6 teams make it instead of 4, but it's 1.
All right, well, answer this question for me. Who has a bigger game this weekend or this coming Sunday and Monday? And Thursday, I guess, potentially. Is it the New York Jets or the W Gas Hipsters?
Depends who you ask.
As a Jet fan, as a self-described Jet fan, and as an owner of a team that has made...
The Jets could be in the Super Bowl, and, you know, it would still be W Gas Hipsters that they
take
precedence of importance. Yep.
Well, there's another person in this league who is a Jet fan as well as a fantasy football owner. Jets number one, fantasy secondary, Jets number one.
Number one, Gino.
Boo, Gino, boo. And maybe we'll get Gino this weekend. As I will also be attending, as we have mentioned on the show previously, Mr. Hip here has season tickets to the Jets, but I will make my one voyage to MetLife Stadium this season. I will be making it this coming Sunday to see the Jets take on the Seattle Seahawks, and hopefully they will have the screen with all the highlights from NFL Red Zone so I can keep track of my players. All right.
I did not make the. I'm looking through it here as we talk. I did not make the playoff in 2012.
Oh.
7-7
Oh, what happened that year?
I don't know.
Did you have Keenan Allen that year?
Quickly scrolling through. That's probably the only year I did, because I remember there was at least one. I think I made it every other year.
All right. Well, off to a rough start. Some injuries, but hey, there's still time for the WGAS Hipsters. And I'm sitting at
our league is just so deep. It's the bye weeks. I think it's going to be interesting because there's just so many injuries, and the league is so deep that people's benches are going to be tested. The quality of the depth too. All right, so we'll conclude here with the hipster beer of the week. We skipped last week, but we're continuing the theme. As last week, we discussed a brewery that I had visited that previous weekend, and we continue that trend. I don't know how I could keep this up. I can't guarantee I'm going to a brewery every we'll do what we can there. Sloop is the name of the brewery. Sloop Brewing. They are located
like Sloop,
in Elizabeth.
Sloop Doggy Dog,
like
that kind of Sloop. Sloop Doggy Dog.
Exactly.
Or Hang On Sloopy. Hang On. Oh, that's it. Hang On Sloopy. Sloopy, Hang On.
They are located in a town called Elizaville, New York. It's a northern, I think it's Dutchess County. I'm not even certain of that, actually. Mm-hmm. It's on the east side of the Hudson, about 2 hours north drive of Manhattan. And you can find their beers on tap in the New York City metropolitan area. They do have them in bars. You can't find bottles or cans of their beer.
Ah.
They have two flagship beers. So the first is the hipster beer of the week. It's called Juice Bomb. It is a IPA, and it's a juicy IPA, and it is just if you like IPAs and you like the fruity juicy IPAs, you need to try this. It's just that good and refreshing. That is their staple IPA. And then they also like to brew a lot of sours. And their flagship sour is called Sour Peach, S-A-U-E-R, Peach.
Yeah, interesting.
You can find that one as well on tap in both of these, Juice Bomb and Sour Peach, both in bars and restaurants in the New York City area, New York area. So it was, unfortunate. I got a couple growlers, but they didn't even sell any cans or bottles at the brewery itself. So,
That's a shame.
But these breweries, they grow. So at some point, I think they have had cans or bottles, but I don't know what their frequency of distribution is or whatever. But if you hear of Sloop, hang on to that, I don't know where I'm going with this one. Just hang on to the idea of getting it and drinking it and enjoying it. So.
Well, let me just ask you, what took you to Elizaville? Was it specifically to go to this brewery?
So, one of my cousins lives 10 minutes away from this brewery, which I didn't know until somebody mentioned the brewery, and I looked it up from how far it was from where we were going. My cousin had a benefit Oktoberfest fundraiser at her house. And I looked it up, and I'm like, this is amazing. This brewery is literally 10 minutes away. You really feel like you're, in rural New York, rural upstate. This is not like, 10 minutes, 10 blocks in Manhattan. This is like, really spread out New York. So for a brewery to be 10 minutes away, you're not passing much between the brewery and the house.
Mm-hmm. So just a hipster coincidence that you happen to be.
Yes. So
right,
we planned it out so that we could, fit in an hour at the brewery and hang out. It was a nice day on Saturday, and they had like a kid's playground for Mr. Jackson to run around and do his thing and point at the bees and play on the on the slide and all that good stuff. So good show.
Hey, man.
We missed you last week. I mean, You had bigger and better things going on.
My apologies to our listeners. Yes, I was in
Hawaii. We all really have been dying for the catch-up episode, so here we are. And back in action.
I did have a jalapeno beer, though. That was really good. So just to... So that was worth the trip to Hawaii, was having that jalapeno beer.
All right. You're learning. That's a good thing. Okay. So good show. And next week, you know, there'll be plenty more to discuss. And,
Wild card game would be next Wednesday,
will the Mets,
I guess.
Be right? In the playoffs, in the divisional series. Will we be previewing a Mets divisional series?
Against the Cubs. Oof. Good luck.
Hey, man.
But hey, just get there. Just get there.
It's a rematch.
It is. Get
it would
there.
Be a rematch.
It's a five-game series.
Well, it was the championship series last year, but anyway.
All right.
All good. Yeah, but that's why we play. It's all fun. All right.
All right. Next.
All right. And I just want to acknowledge we went over an hour with not even a imitation of which is a pretty incredible feat. I'm just going to throw that in there.
So are you saying that we should end now before we do it, before I do it, or should I get it in there? all right. We'll see you next week. All right. Have a good evening, everybody. Have a good evening. All right.